is my rifle. There are many like it, but this one is mine. My rifle is my best friend. It is my life.
I must master it as I must master my life. Without me, my rifle is useless. Without my rifle, I am useless.
I must fire my rifle true. I must shoot straighter than my enemy who is trying to kill me. I must shoot him before he shoots me. I will. Before God, I swear this creed. My rifle and myself are defenders of my country. We are the masters of our enemy. We are the saviors of my life. So be it, until there is no enemy, but peace. Amen.
That story's coming up. But before we go to break, a few messages from our troops stationed overseas.
This is Private Jeffrey Warren from Huntington, West Virginia. Thanks to all my pen pals from Miss Winter's class in North Carolina. All your cards and your drawings of your favorite foods really took my mind off all the death around me.
Hey, Mom and Dad and everyone in Wildomar, California. Got your letter. Glad you guys are doing good. Great to hear Tucker's going to get married. Things are good here, too. They found part of my hand.
Hi, this is Donnie Kern, Station 1st Armed Division in Iraq. Hello, Kelly. Can't wait to get home to see you. I'm going to give you this ring I got off a dead Iraqi woman.
Hi, this is Specialist Diane Knight, 25th Infantry Division based in Iraq. Hey, Mom and Dad and everybody in Virginia. Hope you guys are all doing well. And thanks again to everybody in Marshall for agreeing to jointly raise my son while I'm fighting here.
Hi, this is Corporal Ryan Hayes from Birmingham, Alabama, stationed in North Zone, Iraq. I want to send a message out to my homosexually secret lover, Ben, back home. I hope that you're getting this message, but that nobody else in the military is watching this, because I'm so very erotically homosexually gay. But I hope nobody's watching this from the military, because I would be kicked out. I love you.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
But this is one of the things that became prevalent, was understanding that the king, by grant, never actually gave up title to the land. It was specifically set up in the treaty. See, those men actually ran out of money. They had to negotiate peace. And the peace had to be negotiated not just with Great Britain. It was negotiated between Great Britain, the King of France, the King of Spain, and the King of the Netherlands and Holland, and different ones. It was more international than people realize. When you read the Treaty of Paris in 1783, which was the document that ended the war, see, here again, understanding the construct, the war didn't just end and everyone go home. They actually sat down and negotiated a contract, which we call a treaty, and this said, okay, we're agreeing to these terms, and we're all coming together for our mutual benefit and mutual advantage and all those kind of things to happily restore, quote, the good concourse that used to exist. And this was when the king agreed to the land grant. The king who had given those grants, the king of Great Britain, he agreed that they were sovereign, that he would call them sovereign, that they now actually owned the land, that they possessed title to the land, and that they were treated among the family of nations now, as it states in the Law of Nations. Here again, understand, when they put something like the Law of Nations in their documentation, it's because they understand it and they have read it and they're going to follow it and they're going to make sure everyone else follows it. If you look at the notes on the State of Virginia by Thomas Jefferson, which were voluminous, you can actually look it up at Virginia's library on the line. It's called virginia.edu. And under 13, it talks about the Constitution, which was the Constitution of Virginia. And you will see the land grants in there, how the king held the land in what was called common suckage, meaning he still had title. He was the grantor. They were the grantee. And under grantor-grantee law, the grantor is still in control. And there were many times when the king would actually take the land grant away from whoever they didn't like and give it to someone else they did like. It's not just property. It's also your rights, because in law, constitutional law, and in international law, it says that civil rights are granted. Well, that which is granted can be ungranted. Yeah. And I have 9 cases of case law where they will actually ungrant your civil rights and prosecute you and actually can charge an innocent person for a crime that never occurred. The Treaty of Paris, which was called the Definitive Treaty of Peace, was between King George and the United States of America, meaning the 55 men, the 13 states. And you have to understand who King George is, and it explains who King George is in the treaty. It says King George was the King of Great Britain, France, and Ireland. He was the Duke of Luxembourg and Brunswick, and he was the arch-treasurer and prince-elector of the Holy Roman Empire. One of the things that puzzled me about the treaty was that, how did King George get to be the King of France? I thought King Louis was the King of France. There was a hierarchy of kings in Europe, and a suzerain is one king that owes fealty to another king. So the true king of France was King George, and it meant that King George was, it meant that King Louis was sovereign in his domestic affairs over mm-hmm. France, but he was not sovereign in his international affairs. And that means he couldn't go negotiate treaties and make deals like he made with the United States of America without getting King George's permission, because King George was the true king of France that he owed fealty to. To boil it down into basics, it gives a land boundary of what their lands are, which were from the St. Lawrence River across all the way down over to the Mississippi, down to the Gulf of Mexico, and over through Florida to, not to the tip, but to through the St. Mary's River. And that's the land boundary. So he agreed that they now had the land, and he surrendered title, basically saying, okay, you want me to call you sovereign? I'll treat you as sovereign. However, in Article 4, it states, all bona fide debts heretofore contracted shall meet with no lawful impediment. And since they had not paid King Louis, and since King Louis was subservient to King George was basically saying this, you can have the land, just make sure you pay me the debt. If you read the history, this was what astounded me about the Articles of Confederation, because a lot of people had talked about how the Articles were such a good form of government of the United States of America and so forth. And when I started reading, you actually find that the states were, under the Articles of Confederation, they were at war with each other. It says in history that they were having tariff wars. They were not showing up for their Congress meetings. 5 states would show up, 8 would not. So they weren't even honoring their own agreements to actually run a proficient government. And in the course of that, they violated 3 treaties, international treaties, and they also violated the Treaty of Paris, which was where they agreed to pay the king. So they were not paying the king. They violated those treaties. And George Washington wrote a letter to John Jay at that time in 1786, and he said, what are we going to do with these 13 disunited states? They're not paying their requisitions to the king. And he said, these things cannot go along in this train forever. And the reason they couldn't was because Britain was starting to encroach back on their borders to take everything back.
Doodle went to town and riding on a pony, stuck a feather in his cap and called it macaroni. Yankee Doodle, keep it up, Yankee Doodle dandy, mind the music and the step and with the girls be handy. Father, I went down to camp along with Captain Goody. There we saw the men and boys as thick as hasty pudding. Yankee Doodle, keep it up, Yankee Doodle dandy, mind the music and the step and with the girls be handy. There we saw 1,000 men as rich as Squire David. What they wasted every day, I wish it could be saved. Yankee Doodle, keep it up, Yankee Doodle dandy, mind the music and the step and with the girls be handy. Stallion giving orders to his men, I guess there was a million. Yeah. Yankee Doodle, keep it up, Yankee Doodle Dandy. Mind the music and the step, and with the girls be handy. Then the feathers on his hat, they look so very fine. Oh, I wanted desperately to get to give to my Jemima. Yankee Doodle, keep it up, Yankee Doodle Dandy. Mind the music and the step, and with the girls be handy. Yankee Doodle, keep it up, Yankee Doodle Dandy. Mind the music and the step, and with the girls be handy.
At the beginning of the 19th century, Britain was fighting the French in the Napoleonic Wars. They hoped to cut off supplies from reaching the French, so passed the Orders in Council in 1807. This required all traders from neutral nations to go through British authorities first. The British were also removing seamen from US ships, many of them British-born, and forcing them to join their already overstretched navy. To counter the trade issues, US Congress passed a bill in 1810, promising that if either nation, Britain or France, dropped the trade restrictions with them, the US would cut off trade to the other nation. France was the first to take them up on this offer, and in November 1810, the US cut off trade with Britain. Meanwhile, the Americans had just purchased a vast amount of land from the French and wished to expand into the disputed territories in between. However, in the Northwest Territory, the British were supporting the native resistance against American expansion. They aligned themselves with the Shawnee chief Tecumseh, who had united many tribes into an Indian confederacy. This persuaded many in the US government to demand war against Britain. War was declared in June 1812, and the Americans crossed into Canada straight away. However, they were halted and driven back by the British and the Indian Confederacy. The British pursued the Americans across the border and took Detroit. The US was able to counter and defeat the British Navy in the Great Lakes at the Battle of Lake Erie in 1813. This allowed the Americans to retake Detroit. They then defeated the Indian Confederation at the Battle of the Thames and were able to kill Tecumseh in the fighting. Meanwhile, the British were blockading the United States. During this blockade, they managed to block slave ships from entering the US and freed thousands of slaves. Britain also gave freedom to any slaves who crossed into British territory, many of which would join in the war against America. In Europe in 1814, Napoleon had been defeated and forced into exile. This allowed Britain to focus on defeating the US. British troops landed in Chesapeake Bay, took Washington DC, and infamously burned down the White House. In the South, the British were funding the Red Stick Creek against the Americans in the Creek War. However, by August 1814, under Andrew Jackson, the Americans managed to defeat the Creeks and take over a vast amount of land. In September 1814, the British moved into Maine successfully. However, in quick succession, the US was able to stop a British advance on New York and an assault on Baltimore. The latter battle gave the inspiration for the Star Spangled Banner poem. The British then decided to withdraw from the Northeast and prepared to attack New Orleans. However, peace talks had already begun by the end of 1814. The blockade was straining the American economy, and the British, who were trying to prevent European nations from taking territory from the French, did not see any advantage in pursuing a war with no real benefits. Peace was made in December. The Canadian border remained unchanged, the British agreed not to fund any Indian resistance to American expansion, and they had to give up the idea of an independent Indian nation on the border. However, unaware that a peace deal had been signed, the British attacked New Orleans in January 1815. The Americans, led by Andrew Jackson again, were able to hold them back. This final victory gave the Americans a feeling of national pride and success in the war, despite not really achieving any of their pre-war goals. In US politics, the war brought in the era of good feelings and helped bring an end to the Federalist Party.
We took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We looked down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing. We fired our guns and the British kept a coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago.
We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Old Hickory said we could take them by surprise if we didn't fire muskets till we looked them in the eye. We held our fire till we see their faces well. Then we opened up our squirrel guns and really gave them well.
We fired our guns and the British kept coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We fired our cannon till the barrel melted down. So we grabbed an alligator and we fought another round. We filled his head with cannonballs and powdered his behind. And when we touched the powder off, the gator lost his mind.
We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Last week, the House voted to cut $40 billion from the federal food stamp program over the next decade. This move would be devastating for the 1 in 7 Americans currently on food stamps. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that in 2014 alone, it would deprive 4 million Americans of this vital source of help. So once again, those struggling to make ends meet are the first to be targeted by lawmakers looking to slash an out-of-control deficit. But amidst the arguments to cut such programs like Meals on Wheels, special education, and food stamps, there seems to be very little discussion to slash this country's most fiscally bloated industry of all. Of course, I'm talking about the American military machine, an out-of-control beast that's propagated by U.S. tax dollars. So to discuss how Americans can stop financially supporting the military-industrial complex, I'm joined now by Ed Hedeman, founder of the National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee and author of the book War Tax Resistance, a guide to withholding your support from the military. Ed, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Abby, for having me.
So, Ed, your organization features a pie chart that shows that 47% of the estimated 2014 federal budget will be spent on military expenditures, yet the government breakdown only shows 24% going towards defense. Why the discrepancy here, and how did you arrive at these numbers?
Well, the discrepancy is that this is of federal funds. The government's figure usually includes trust funds like Social Security, but trust funds like Social Security are raised separately and spent separately. What we look at are the federal funds which are raised from the federal income tax on someone's 1040 form and then spent depending on how Congress allocates them. We also include the cost of past wars, because if the government borrows money for its war spending, then the payment of that is put off to the future. And so we include that, not just the current military spending.
I wanted to see if you can break down what specific taxes that we pay for go toward military spending.
Well, the main one is the federal income tax that you pay on your 1040 form. When you fill out your 1040 form, on the back of the form, there's a line that says federal tax. That's what I'm talking about and what is what we consider a war tax. It doesn't specifically go to war. It goes to a lot of things, but war military spending is a large part of it. There's also a separate line further down on the 1040 form that is Social Security. We're not looking at that. It's the federal income tax line that is the one that we consider the primary war tax.
And Ed, you mentioned past wars, and I think this is a really important point to explore right now. People often think of wars as just a snapshot in time. They're initiated and then they're over, but in fact the cost for a single war can last centuries. I wanted you to break down how much we're paying for past wars.
Well, the past war portion is includes veterans' benefits, but a large part of that past war is the interest on the national debt. We're still paying off expenses not only for the Vietnam War and World War II, but also previous wars, probably all the way going back to the Civil War. Not a lot of money, but the Civil War is a huge expenditure. It was never really paid off, and we continue to pay interest on that.
ye that hold communion with Southern Confederate so bold. And I'll tell you some men for the Union who in Northern ranks were enrolled. They came to Missouri in their glory, and they thought at their might we'd be dismayed. But they soon had a different story when they met Kelly's Irish Brigade. When they met with the Irish Brigade, me boys, when they met with the Irish Brigade, didn't those cowardly Lincolnites tremble when they met with the Irish Brigade? They have called us rebels and traitors, but themselves have thrown off that name of late. They were called by the English invaders at home in the year of 98. The name to us is not a new one, though it is one that shall never degrade. Any true-hearted Irishman in the ranks of Kelly's Irish Brigade, when they met with the Irish Brigade, my boys, when they met with the Irish Brigade, didn't those cowardly Lincolnites tremble when they met with the Irish Brigade? Not call us invaders, tease, but stakes, rights, and liberty we ask. And Missouri will ever defend her, no matter how hard may be the task. Then let it through Irishmen assemble, let the voice of Missouri be obeyed. And the northern fanatics will tremble when again they meet Kelly's Irish Brigade. When they met with the Irish Brigade, my boys, when they met with the Irish Brigade, didn't those cowardly Lincolnites tremble when they met with the Irish Brigade? When they met with the Irish Brigade, my boys, when they met with the Irish Brigade, didn't those cowardly Lincolnites tremble when they met with the Irish Brigade?
Kansas City's World War I Museum, a national memorial, has passed the U.S. House. It was sponsored by Congressman Emanuel Cleaver. No national memorial currently exists to honor veterans of World War I. This amendment gives Kansas City the distinction of leading the nation, marking the centennial anniversary. And this year marks 100 years since the beginning of World War I. As a result, the museum at the Liberty Memorial will host a free public ceremony Monday morning.
And this is a perfect time to just honor those soldiers who have bravely fought and who have served for our country by coming here to the National World War I Museum. It's a world-class museum, and it is the nation's memorial to the First World War.
It is a very nice one, and they'll have musical performances, free ice cream, what's more American, and a walk of honor. That ceremony will be held there at the memorial, where more than 100 engraved bricks will be added to the 9,000 that are already there. Tomorrow, 30 military vehicles from throughout history will be on display also in front of the memorial.
We're the cousins, ruled over dozens.
King George,
Sputnik,
Kaiserville.
When the century started, we could hardly be parted.
But that was all before the frightful First World War. I'm King George, when young I forged an alliance with these two. Through Queen Vic we were elated. Check out the world power she created.
I'm Tsar Nicholas, with George Mischievous swapped uniforms at posh dudes. We looked like twins, had matching beards. Right royal family for little weird.
Drove advisors round the bend.
The woman's friendship had to end.
We're relations crowned by our nations,
Great Britain,
Russia,
and Germany.
When our governments fell out, peaceful relations put in down, conditions perfect for the frightful First World War.
I'm Kaiser Wilhelm, I kind of felt a bit left out by the rest. They had beards, I only had a moustache. Feared my withered arm gave me less panache. I loved the military, I thought at diplomacy I would be the best.
We sent telegrams, hoped to stop the bombs, but they weren't worth the paper they were written on.
I called England Mad March Hell.
Ha! You didn't help avert war there. Now all leaders, not all succeeders, Great Britain,
Russia,
both against me. I was in charge of German troops,
but you proved to be hopeless, oops.
The commanders they ignored
in the frightful First World War.
My family ties embarrassing, our kinship now a hassle. I changed my German surname to Windsor, like the castle. Then Russian Revolution came, nix it.
Help me, mate!
I couldn't support him, had to leave him to his fate.
Execution? Oh!
And when the war was no more,
we won!
We lost!
Call it a score draw!
I was the only one left in charge.
I ran away, but still at large.
And all this frightful war could do was set up World War II,
which was us against you!
Boo boo be doo!
Here is the latest news from the NBC newsroom in Chicago. Once again, the Allied supply line to the Rhine has been opened, despite fanatical German counterattacks. The Germans had cut the road north of Eindhoven, but the Allies struck back and opened the vital corridor toward the Arnhem Pocket in Holland. British tanks, supported by American paratroopers, reopened the line to the beleaguered Tommies, who have withstood the best the Germans could hurl at them for the past 9 days. The situation at the moment is not one of the best, but an Allied officer also declares that it is not critical. Incidentally, it's revealed now the German SS troops are guarding the Franco-German frontier in the south to prohibit the further Nazi units on the French side of the border from retreating into Germany. The order is said to apply to German officers as well as all ranks of enlisted men. But this is not to be taken that the end is in sight. Far from that. For General de Gaulle warns that the hardest fighting lies ahead inside Germany. The French leader today flatly said that the end of the war in Europe must not be expected before next spring. As for what's to happen to Germany after its military collapse, the British so far have said nothing of the plan suggested by Treasury Secretary Morgenthau. Under his plan, the Reich would be converted into a country of small farms. But the Berlin Radio has been saying plenty. Screamed the Berlin Radio, Clemenceau has said there were 23 million Germans too many. Morgenthau wants to see 43 million Germans exterminated. England has been attacked by robot bombs for the 10th straight night. Apparently, the flying bombs were launched from German planes in the North Sea region. The Red Army's 9-day-old Baltic offensive has cleared the Nazis from almost all of Estonia. Russian columns have taken the seaport of Haapsalu and a 35-mile stretch along the Gulf of Riga in their drive toward the Latvian capital. American troops in Italy are closing in on the vital highway between Rimini and Bologna. And across the Adriatic, large German forces are said to be pulling out of Greece in a dash toward the Albanian coast. In the Pacific, an American flying boat is credited with the unusual feat of sinking 3 Jap warships in a single bombing run. The Yank flyers discovered 2 enemy destroyers, or rather destroyer escorts, taking fuel from a seaplane tender off the southern Philippines and destroyed all 3 vessels. 2 large Jap cargo ships were sunk in other action.
...12:55 a.m. Eastern Wartime, WEAF, New York. Hello, everyone. Here is the latest news from the NBC newsroom in New York. The British Second Army has still not established a firm junction with the isolated British paratroopers encircled by the Nazis northwest of Arnhem, Holland, for the past 9 days. And the gallant airborne men themselves, fighting against heavy odds, have been forced to yield their precarious foothold on the north bank of the Lower Rhine. The supply corridor, which General Dempsey's Second Army men have established with the paratroopers, is a narrow one, 50 miles long, and is threatened by determined Nazi counterattacks. But the corridor is still being held open, and the supplies are still getting through. The paratrooper situation is described by headquarters as not critical, but the announcement emphasizes that the supply corridor is extremely vulnerable.
Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. And he ain't gonna jump
no more. Is everybody happy? Cries the shaker looking up. A hero meekly answered yes, and then they stood him up. He leaped right out into the blast, his static line unhooked, and he ain't gonna jump no more. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. And he ain't gonna jump no more.
He counted loud, he counted long, he waited for the shot. He felt the wind, he felt the clouds, he felt the awful drop. He jerked his reserve, the silk spilled out, wrapped around his legs.
And he ain't gonna jump no more.
His risers wrapped around his neck, connectors cracked his dome. His line were tied and stalled knots around his skinny bone. His canopy became his shroud, he hurtled to the ground.
And he ain't gonna jump no more. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. And he ain't gonna jump no more. Through his mind, he thought about the girl back home, the one he left behind. He thought about the medics and he wondered what they'd find. And he ain't gonna jump no more.
The ambulance was on the spot, but he's been running wild. Medics screamed and jumped with cream, rolled up their sleeves and smiled. For it had been a week or more since that the shoot had failed.
And he ain't gonna jump no more.
He hit the ground, his arm was flat, his blood was burning high. His comrades and we heard you say, what a hell of a way to die. He lay there rolling round in all the welter of his cause.
And he ain't gonna jump no more. Glory, glory, what a hell of a way to die. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. Gory, gory, what a hell of a way to die. And he ain't gonna jump no more.
Grandpa, we gotta take off. I have a little emergency here. I was flying my kite that's shaped like a shark and it got stuck in a tree. So we're gonna...
I got stuck in a tree once. In Korea. We were parachuting in and the weather was a nightmare. We got blown all over the place. I missed my drop point, and I wound up stuck in a tree. I tried to cut myself down, but I dropped my knife. And then I see a group of four commie soldiers coming towards me. I'm trying not to make a sound. The bastards are right underneath me. And then one of them bends down and picks up my knife. I realize I got about 2 seconds before they look up.
Holy bitch, what'd you do, Grandpa Hampton?
I pulled out my gun and started firing like hell.
Oh, man, did you survive, Pop-Pop?
Oh, I did. But they didn't. I killed all of them. Then I shot myself down from the tree. And when I hit the ground, I see one of them still got a little fight left in him. But I'm out of bullets. So I pick up the butt of my gun and I smash his skull in. Oh, anyway, you guys meet Paro?
No, what is that thing?
Oh, he's a robotic seal. I went to the VA, and they gave me this. Said I needed a companion. I was pissed at first, but I grew to like the little guy. Isn't that right, Paro?
The real threat to our security isn't the danger of bankruptcy. It is the danger of communist aggression. If communism is allowed to absorb the free nations one by one, then we would be isolated from our sources of supply and detached from our friends.
Dear love, I'm writing you this letter, hoping everything soon will get better. It seems like yesterday when it took me away to participate in World War II. Now we all got extension of a duty. We're going to Korea to help the South shooting. Today is July 1st, 1950. I hope to see you soon, baby.
Dear Tom, I hope you get home soon. I miss you every day. I walk around in a room at night. I sit alone in the bathroom crying, hoping you don't end up dying. Please tell me, how is it down there? I heard MacArthur is down there to take care. He's a war hero, he will get you through. That's at least the world's point of view. Dear love, don't be sitting up crying. Everything is good, I'm not the one dying. We started up at the Pusan perimeter. Then September 15th, we had no limiter. We outflanked them, this was like the key cylinder. Then we was on the move, we fought good and took back Seoul. MacArthur got cocky and bombed a hole on the Chinese side of the Yalu River. That even made true men shiver. It's like a game of risk, my love. Now we just need some guidance from above, because the Chinese have entered the war, and that might have opened hell's doors. Today is October 19th, 1950. I hope to see you soon, baby. Dear Tom, it's been almost 5 months now. I haven't got a single letter from then to now. You are starting to scare me, baby, you okay? Don't tell me we will miss you on Memorial Day. You got a son, a newborn child. He needs his father more even now. So please hurry back, you're his only dad. Who could ask for more? Oh wait, somebody's at the door.
So we have been repeatedly faced with the cruel irony of watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schoolroom. So we watch them in brutal solidarity burning the huts of a poor village. But we realize that they would hardly live on the same block in Chicago or Atlanta. As I have walked among the desperate, rejected, and angry young men, I have told them that Molotov cocktails and rifles would not solve their problems. But they ask, and rightly so, what about Vietnam? They ask if our own nation wasn't using massive doses of violence to solve its problems. And I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government.
I have spoken to you from this office, where so many decisions have been made that shaped the history of this nation. I have always tried to do what was best.
Yes. And cover.
Alam ang lego.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm over here, this job is evil. They sent me here to Vietnam to kill innocent people. My mother wrote me, said the president, he doesn't care. He trying to leave the footprints of America here. They say we're trying to stop Chinese expansion, but I ain't seen no Chinese since we landed. Sent my whole entire unit thinking we could win against the Viet Cong guerrillas there in Gia Dinh. I
I didn't sign up to kill women or any children. For every enemy soldier, we killing six civilians. Yeah, and it ain't right to me. I ain't got enough of motherfuckers fighting me. It frightens me. And I just wanna see my son and moms. But over here they dropping 7 million tons of bombs. I spend my days dodging all these booby traps and mines. And at night praying to God that I get back alive. And I'm forced to sit back and wonder why I was a part of Operation Rolling Thunder. In a foxhole with 9 months left here. Jungle like the fucking harbinger of death here. I'm ready.
Call me Thorburn, John A. Staff Sergeant, Marksman, skillin', killin', illin'. I'm able and willing, kill a village elephant, raping and pillage a village. Illegitimate killers, U.S. military guerrillas. This ain't no real war. Vietnam, World War II, that's a war. This is just a military conflict. Soothing, drug abusing, Vietnamese women screwing, sex, gambling, and fools, and all this shit is amusing. Bitches and guns, this is every man's dream. I don't wanna go home, where I'm just an ordinary human being. Special op, Huey Chopper, gunship, run, gook, run when the minigun. Spit, won't miss, kill it. Spit 4,000 bullets a minute. Victor Charlie hit trigger, hit it. I'm in it to win it, get it. The lieutenant hit it. The villain, I've been it. The killing, I did it. Crippled, did it. Pictures, I painted it. Vivid, livid. A wizard with weapons. A secret mission, we about to begin it. Government funded behind enemy lines. Bullets is spraying. It's heating up 100 degrees. The enemies, the North Vietnamese. Bitch, please, ain't no sweat, I'm totally at ease. Until I see the pilot got hit. And we about to hit some trees. Taylor Road, the pro, crash land. American man. Cambodia, right in the enemy hand. Take a swig of the whiskey to calm us. Them yellow men wearing black pajamas, they wanna harm us. They all up on us, bang bang. Bullet hit my chest, feel no pain. To my left, the captain caught a bullet right in his brain. Body parts flying, loss of limbs, explosions. Bad intentions, I see my best friend's intestines. Pray to the one above, it's raining, I'm covered in mud. I think I'm dying, I feel dizzy, I'm losing blood. I see my childhood, I'm back in the arms of my mother. I see my whole life, I see Christ, I see bright lights. I see Israelites, Muslims and Christians. Peace, no fights, black, whites, Asians, people of all types. I must have died, then I woke up surprised I'm alive. I'm in a hospital bed, they rescued me, I survived. I escaped the war, came back, but ain't escape. Agent Orange, two of my kids born handicapped. Spastic, quadriplegia, microcephalic, cerebral palsy, cortical blindness. Name it, they had it, my son died, he ain't live. But I still try to think positive, cause in life, God take, God give.
Do you think that religion should be taught in schools?
If it's voluntary, yes. If it's mandatory, no.
Does you think there's a way for people to make the way them teach religion more interesting?
Yes. The movie, The Passion of the Christ,
aight,
is a very effective teaching tool, I think.
I heard they ain't as good as Lethal Weapon 3.
No, I think it's slightly better than Lethal Weapon 3.
Ain't it basically a bit of a rip-off of Gladiator?
No, it's not at all.
But it's like that kind of thing, isn't it?
No, it's about the death and crucifixion of Christ.
Ain't you scared, though, that because it's made so much cash, it will just make a sequel and it won't be as good, like, you know, after Blob,
probably.
Come back to life, whatever. What else is the election going to be fought on this year?
It'll probably be about Iraq.
Does you think that Saddam's ever was able to make these weapons of mass destruction or whatever, or as they is called, BLTs?
Was Saddam able to make them?
Could he make BLTs?
Yes. At one time he was using BLTs on the Kurds in the north.
Was it worth fighting a war over BLTs?
I don't think Saddam Hussein and Iraq were a threat to the United States, even if they had WMDs or BLTs, as long as they weren't nuclear weapons.
If you had the evidence that Saddam had these BLTs in his house, would you have said yes, attack?
Not unless he had, if he had anthrax, if he had mustard gas.
Whatever you put in them.
No, no. If he had mustard gas, no.
Let's say he didn't have mustard and the BLTs just was plain. Would you have been able to go in there then?
No.
Is it ever worth fighting a war over sandwiches?
Let me, again, just give you a sense of where I am on the intelligence. For example, it's essential that I explain this properly to the parents of those who've lost their lives. I need war. I need war. And I want there to be a full war. And the American people need war. I'm a war president with war on my mind. I'm a war president. I wish it wasn't true. I'm a war president with war on my mind. I'm a war president. I wish it wasn't true, but it is true. And the American people need to know they've got a president who sees the world the way it is. And I see dangers that exist. This is all in the context of war. But I don't want to get in the word contest. War, 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 war. I don't want to sound like a broken record.
War, 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 war.
I know I'm getting repetitive.
I don't want to sound like a broken record.
I'm a war president with war, war on my mind. And the American people need to know they've got a president trying to avoid responsibility. Because the war against terrorists is a war against intelligence. Let me again just give you a sense of where I am on the intelligence with war on my mind. I need war. I need good, honest war. I'm a war president. I'm interested in war. I wish it wasn't true. And I want a dangerous world. So we need a good war. I'm trying to avoid intelligence. We've got people working hard around the world to get war. I want war. And I look forward to the war. Again, I repeat to you, I'm a war president with war on my mind. I'm a war president. I wish it wasn't true. I'm a war president with war on my mind. I'm a war president. I wish it wasn't true, but it is true. And the American people need to know they've got a president who sees the world the way it is. And I see dangers that exist. This is all in the context of war. Because I don't think America can stand by and hope for the best from a madman.
This world, we're heading into a world of danger, possible nuclear wars, because the banking industry is trying to take over the world. 9/11 is the beginning of the war on terror. That war on terror is leading us into Iraq, which is the next lie. So you had the lie of 9/11, how that happened. Nobody knows how Building 7 came down. Okay, we know 9/11 was a fraud. The American people don't know it, but more and more of them are believing it. Okay, so that was the first lie. Besides the inception, I'm not going back to the inception of the Federal Reserve, that original lie, but 9/11 was the first lie in this present state we're in. 9/11 is the kickoff of the war against the American people and the people of the world. 9/11 was a phony. It's a fraud. It didn't happen the way they told us it happened. Now, because of 9/11, we then had the authority to go into Afghanistan and Iraq. Iraq didn't have weapons of mass destruction, okay? So that was the next lie. Now they're talking about going into Iran. Now, how would you feel if you were Iran and you had this big, powerful country, America, go into your next-door neighbor, take over their oil fields, right? Wouldn't you be worried about what they were going to do to you? Of course you're going to be worried. But the people of America don't think about it from Iran's point of view. They think about it from our point of view. So now we're going to send more troops into Iraq and keep building up because they want Iraq and the Middle East to become part of the New World Order. And Iraq was using, Saddam wanted to start using euros instead of dollars, right? Iran wants to start using euros instead of dollars, okay? So I'm saying, what they're trying to do is preserve their power. And one lie leads to the next lie, leads to the next lie. And until you get to the root cause of 9/11, which is supposedly the war on terror, we'll never solve our problems here. Should we send more troops into Iraq? Should we not send more troops into Iraq? Well, the truth is, the fact is, that it all goes back to this war on terror. Where did 9/11 come from? That's the root cause of everything. And until we have a full investigation, find out why Building 7 fell down, why they shipped all the steel out of America so quickly, you know, from the buildings, why all the things that don't make any sense about 9/11, until we find out why it really happened, you know, we'll never understand why there's a war on terror. And we'll never be able to prove that the war on terror is a phony.
A state of emergency has been declared in France after at least 120 people were killed in gun and bomb attacks across central Paris. President Hollande called the almost simultaneous attacks a horror and vowed to wage a merciless fight against terrorism.
Au moment où je m'exprime,
the French leader also imposed border controls and deployed 1,500 extra troops following the incidents. The attack started at around 9:30 on Friday night after blasts were heard near the Stade de France in the north of the city. Police confirmed these were three simultaneous bombings. An hour later, there were reports of a shooting at Le Carillon Café Bar and Le Petit Cambodge restaurant in the 10th arrondissement, around 5 miles away from the stadium. 14 people were killed in the incidents. The deadliest attack took place at the Bataclan concert hall at around 11 p.m. when four gunmen stormed an Eagles of Death metal concert. They began to fire indiscriminately into the crowd, throwing explosives as they went. One of the attackers reportedly shouted "God is great" in Arabic during the massacre. Dozens of hostages were taken inside the venue. A short time later, security forces launched an assault on the theatre. The two attackers were killed after detonating explosive belts. More than 80 concertgoers died at the venue. Less than a mile away, 18 diners at Le Belle Equipe were shot dead during another attack. 5 people were also killed in La Casa Nostra Pizzeria in the 11th arrondissement. Police say there were 8 attackers in total. All of them are now dead. 7 are believed to have detonated suicide vests. These are the deadliest attacks in Europe since the 2004 Madrid bombings. Leaders across the world have condemned the attacks, with US President Obama branding the incidents an attack on all humanity.
And their lipped mouths in the night, and stumbling through the street, they say, "Sir, do you got a light? And if you do, then you're my friend. And if you don't, then you're my foe. And if you are a deity of any sort, then please don't go. Ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. Ah ah ah. Ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas." Down in Lexington, they walk in new shoes, stuck to aging feet, and close their eyes and open, and I recognize the aging street, and think about how things were right when they were young and veins were tight. And if you are the ghost of Christmas past, then won't you stay the night? Ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. Ah ah ah. Ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. Ah ah ah. Ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. Down in Bronxy Bronx, the kids go sledding down snow-covered slopes, and frozen noses, frozen toes, the frozen city starts to glow. And yes, they know that it will pass, and yes, they know New York will thaw. But if you are a friend of any sort, then play along and catch a cold. Ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. Ah ah ah. Ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. Ooh ooh ooh. Ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. Ah ah ah. Ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. I love Paris in the rain. I love Paris. Paris in the rain. I love, I love, I love in the rain. I love Paris in the rain. I love Paris in the rain. Man, I love, I love, I love in the rain. I love, I love, I love in the rain. Down in Paris, they walk fast. That is unless they're walking slow. And in cafes, they look away. That is unless they look right in. And in the gardens, I get lost. That is unless I'm getting found. And if you are the ghost of New York City, won't you stick around? Ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. Ah, 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 ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. Ouh, 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 ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. Ah, 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 ne me quitte pas, mon cher. Ne me quitte pas. I love Paris in the rain. I love Paris in the rain. I love, I love, I love in the rain. I love Paris in the rain. I love Paris in the rain. Man, I love, I love, I love in the rain. And I love, I love, I love in the rain.
Like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
Moving on, it was Veterans Day earlier this week, and no, I'm not gonna critique Veterans Day, because I'd prefer my likability to remain slightly higher than Ebola and sour apple Jolly Ranchers. Things are disgusting. That's why I'm bringing in senior bad decision maker John F. O'Donnell to do it.
John!
Not happening.
John.
Not gonna do it. Not this time, Lee.
Come on, John.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Get on in here.
No.
John, I knew you were the guy for this job when I heard you tell Neil deGrasse Tyson that he didn't know about space.
All right. No. Oh, come on. All right. You know what? I stand by that. That guy don't know nothing. All right. But I'm not critiquing Veterans Day, Lee. It's a bad idea. It's like critiquing Brad Pitt's abs in Fight Club. You just don't do it. You
not,
don't do
not
it.
Not my problem, buddy. What do you got for me?
Seriously, are you like trying to get me kicked out of America here? You know? I really enjoy water parks and disco fries like way too much to leave.
Come on,
way
get on with it. Let's go.
All right, fine. We should all boycott Veterans Day.
Whoa, John! Easy.
All right, just let me finish. We should all boycott Veterans Day because its true meaning has been shamefully corrupted. According to Veterans for Peace, it's become less about honoring our soldiers and more about glorifying endless war. Instead, we should celebrate the original holiday, Armistice Day, which is meant to be a reflection on peace. Let the hate emails commence.
You're not.
Thank you.
Hate emails.
Here we go. Here's the first one coming through right here. What do we got? Oh, dear John, no one cares about your stupid opinion, pig boy. Aw. You're a walking piece of human garbage who has never served. Let veterans speak for themselves, carpet muncher. Love, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Oh, Neil. Oh, you know what? I'll let the veterans speak for themselves. Play the quote. Throw the quote. Read the quote, Lee.
Okay,
show it.
Right,
show the
right.
quote. Show the
if
quote.
If we really wanted to honor veterans, we would abolish Veterans Day and replace it with a day that celebrates peace, not war. Peace is a better way to honor the sacrifice of veterans like me than a day designed to recruit the next generation of soldiers we'll have to thank for their service in yet another war.
Boom!
Now, go find the others. .com. A war is one of those things that once it's been declared and once you've gone to it, you've already lost.